Hello, welcome to Cohen Esri Apartment Investors podcast, where we talk about various topics related to investing in real estate, particularly in the multifamily sector. We've got Ryan Huffman, our Chief Operating Officer, as well as Matthew Von Indy, our VP of Acquisitions. Today, we are going to take a look into some different headlines that you all might be seeing or hearing and reading about, and giving you our take on them. Sometimes headlines are clickbait, and sometimes they are based in fact. And sometimes they're, of course, totally different than what we might see on the ground level looking at deals and trying to make things happen over here on the acquisition side. So we've got a variety of headlines that you, Ryan and Matt, have seen ahead of time. But we'll go through these and talk through navigating fact versus fiction in some of these headlines. So the first one that I thought was really interesting was one, Matt, that you shared with me recently. And overall, the messaging from this article was that apartment rent growth shrinks to 2.3%. So there's a lot to pack into that statement. You know, some people might think, whoa, that sounds really bad. And some other people might not think that at just first glance at that. But Matt, maybe if you can talk through what we're seeing in terms of rental rate growth or not, and how this has played out in our underwriting process.
Sure. Yeah, there have been headlines basically under that same general tone popping up on all the major websites, at least the ones that we look at regularly, whether it be Globe Street or Yardi, what have you. They are a little bit misleading, and it's only because it's taking, a lot of them are varying sample sizes, but for the most part, you're dealing with 9 to about 12 million units nationwide. They normally don't delineate between vintage, between asset grade on an asset basis per property. They also really don't delineate or do a good job delineating between markets and submarkets. So headlines like that are, at least from our perspective, entirely misleading because as we know very well, it's all about location, location, location. And it's not just the market or the region, it's the submarket, and it's the pocket within submarkets where we still are finding tons of lucrative opportunities and that are blowing far and away beyond 2.3% annual rent growth.
I do. Sorry,
go ahead, Ryan.
I think it's important to normalize the conversation, is what I'm going to call it. So, you know, I think when everybody says, "Oh my gosh, it's shrinking to 2.3%," well, historically, apartment rent growth has grown anywhere between 2 and 3%. That's what you can anticipate on an annual basis for normal rent growth. So, what you're really seeing here is we've had this hot time that rent's been really expanding, and now we're going back to the normal. So, and everybody in the industry that you talk to for the last, call it 3-4 years, will say the same thing. The rent growth that we were experiencing is not sustainable. At some point, we're reaching that point now, you're going to go back to a normal, regular increase. I also think that Matt's right. You know, you're seeing some really big headlines out of San Francisco, for example, where they had a really hot rental market. Now they've got a mass exodus of folks. And so if you look kind of across the country map, you've got kind of New York City, coastal California, where they're seeing much larger rent drops, and the rent is still kind of steaming forward in the Midwest. So you got to kind of dig in and realize what market you're in and what property and vintage you're in. But 2.3% is normal. That's not anything that is abnormal for what we would see going forward.
Yeah, and I think for our audience's benefit, I mean, our value proposition as a firm with the companies or with the properties that we are purchasing is that we are really creating additional value for the residents who are living there. And so we're not just in it to maintain the status quo of the properties that we're acquiring. We're making substantial improvements to those properties, and we've got a programmatic approach to increasing rents over time, but not to the point that it's going to scare everybody away. So we do pay really close attention to those submarkets, as Matt mentioned, and just also as Ryan said, I totally agree with you, really trying to normalize the conversation and realizing historically that this is actually the norm. This isn't anything to be really nervous about. Okay, how about this next headline? Fannie Mae sees higher multifamily housing starts in 2023. So for investors or for a sponsor who might be buying already existing multifamily properties, that could cause some concern. Oh, what's the competitive landscape look like now? Are you worried that some of these newer builds are going to be more favorable for residents compared to Class B, which is our standard, or being the best B? So Matt, do you want to start by digging into this and what our take is on the numbers that are coming out in terms of multifamily starts?
Yeah, not a whole lot to contest here in terms of general headline. We're seeing basically reporting along those lines, especially the recent ones out of Fannie Mae. In terms of how it would impact our portfolio, it would only really be to the upside. We've heard rumblings, increasingly so, by the way, from certain equity groups, mainly along the coasts, that are beginning to entertain options as they arise of newly built product that basically the merchant developers just need to get off their balance sheets to move forward onto the next project and bank the next round of fees. In terms of it being a strategic threat to basically our bread and butter, which is our best B strategy, seeking out value add properties that have a healthy runway and a robust growth story, I don't think there's much there in the way of a threat. We are so insulated, both in terms of the going in rent profile and the post-renovation rent profile, that I don't think there's any reason for us to be concerned.
And I think where we should go with this a little bit is let's go back in time. The development process is long. There's a long runway to getting entitlements, finding the land. So even though you're seeing housing starts up in 2023, you have to assume that all of that started back in kind of 2020, 2021. And it's just now coming to fruition where they can start building. That's the first premise. So, you know, that's where you start. Yesterday, Lee and I were talking, and this will add to Matt's commentary. This country needs 5 million housing units to keep up, total, to keep up with the current demand, and 7 million affordable units. So in ways, you really do need and want those starts to occur. I don't see a threat right now to absorption. I do think that's market to market. So we do have a habit in this industry of overbuilding. But right now the absorption is so high because the demand is so high. You know, are there some markets that have a risk of overbuilding? Sure, there are. But generally speaking, because construction costs have been as high as they have been, and now interest rates are as high as they have been, we're still a bit behind the eight ball, as you can see from the numbers, on the types of housing that we need.
Right. I think that's a great point. And do we see in the data or in our experience that there's much movement from a Class B apartment to Class A, which would be a new build, typically, at least? Or are people who are leaving a rental community altogether, are they going to a single family home? Or are they moving to, like, from Class B to Class C? What's the most typical movement pattern, if any?
I mean, you don't generally see a movement up because the rent disparity right now nationwide between A and B is pretty still huge. I mean, you're still talking about between $500 and $600 a month rent increases to go from B to A. I would say that, you know, in the past, before this run-up of rates, one of the most common was certainly home purchasing. We're not seeing that as much now because obviously down payment requirements are a bit higher and the interest rates are just off the charts for folks to buy right now. So we aren't necessarily seeing that movement. I do think the inflationary pressure has probably led to some folks needing to, I'm going to call it, downgrade or go from B to C product, or at least seek out specials. And again, this is all market submarket specific. We're not seeing a lot of that in Kansas City, but here's a live example. What we are seeing, Jacksonville, where we just bought a property, is we've got 1,100 units coming out of the ground in lease up right around kind of where we're at because it's a high demand area. So you're going to see a temporary blip that's going to be temporary until that absorption takes hold. but it'll be such a temporary blip because, again, it's such a hot area. It may last 6 months. It may only last 3 months. We don't see it lasting a year because the absorption is too high. So, you know, that's one of the things that I would say to that question, Lydia.
Mm-hmm. I mean, great responses from both of you. So how about a different headline? This one says, multifamily property price decline continues. And we have, you know, maybe some experience to share both on the buy side and the sell side. But are you all, with your underwriting team and everything you're seeing, are you seeing a price decline now in properties that we are trying to buy? And what's the size of that been, if any?
We definitely have been. So just a high level, and we can sort of zoom in and get more current. Year over year, we're seeing from our desk, from our regular desk review, anywhere between 10 and 15%, and that'll vary by market. Overall, on an annual basis, the latest data from MSCI basically shows that declines are a little north of 12% overall. So it's, again, a stark headline. When you dive in and really crunch the numbers, we're sort of seeing the same trend that we're seeing in inflation data overall, which is that it's slowing. So as inflation is cooling, so too is the decline. I think here, the summary of this article is that it was 2.7% decline month over month in February. That is now down into the 1% range from the latest data we have out of May. And all signs are pointing to that stabilizing out, return to normal, to borrow Ryan's phrase.
And I think the pressure on that, biggest chunk of pressure you're seeing on that is interest rates. I mean, before you could get, you know, debt in the 3% range, now debt is in the 5.5 to 6% range, and that creates downward pressure on pricing, on how you're looking at deals. So that's really kind of the main driver. As the Fed begins to stabilize and, you know, ultimately reverse course, which is what everybody believes they will do, to a different target rate, you'll see that start to grow.
What about historically, Ryan? Is this, you know, a similar case to what we talked about before, where we saw this peak in 2021, 2022 of pricing that just shot through the roof when capital was flowing more freely, and now this is more normalized pricing? Or do you think it's more nuanced than that?
I personally think it's more nuanced than that. I think, you know, rates went up so fast and so furious that the market didn't really have time to react. And so what you got now and what you're seeing, multifamily volume is down about 45 and 50% year over year. That is driven by, if you are not under pressure to sell, meaning you don't have a fund life ending or you don't have a refi coming, then everybody's kind of in a hold and wait pattern right now. Let's see what happens. Now, I will say over the last 2 weeks, we've had an avalanche of property enter the market. And I forecasted this, if you listen to a podcast, you know, a year ago, that it wasn't going to be until the Fed slowed its pace and everybody could get the smoke to clear and see their pathway to how deals get done. And you're starting to see that breakthrough. Once you have that and capital reenters the market, a lot of guys are sitting on the sidelines, you will start to see pricing move a different direction because you'll have increased competition for those deals. And that's the, we call it the itchy trigger finger of the deal makers. When you haven't done deals for a while, at some point you got to find a way to do a deal. And so that's really kind of my opinion of what you're going to see. I don't know that you'll ever get back to what I'm going to call those. You may, because this market is very cyclical, those hot markets of 21, 22, because you'd really have to have rates that are down in that low, you know, three range again. And that's all going to be driven by macroeconomic conditions. And so I think where the Fed is headed is to get everything back to normal or normalized. And so you'll see kind of a quote reset and then a standard tick up the way it would normally go. My opinion. Matt, I don't know what you think, but that's my opinion.
I would echo that. I think it was almost impossible not to have a sort of pause and catch your breath reaction. They increased rates nearly 2,000% in a year. I mean, it's impossible for the market not to respond, for the market not to, for transactions not to really just grind to a halt. And we saw that. You're coming off the heels also from some of these operators and in a lot of markets with double-digit rent growth. So even at the worst, you know, when inflation was peaking around 9, 10%, they were still, you know, resetting their rents well above the inflationary pressure point. And as Ryan indicated, they decided logically to head toward the sidelines and just wait this out. Finally, happy skip day, by the way, with the announcement today that the Fed is taking a pause. We might see a return to heightened activity levels in the markets.
Yeah. And Matt, thank you for that segue to our very next headline, which was multifamily cap rates have begun to stabilize. And really the high level takeaway from this article goes into what you're saying. This article was from April. And at the time, the article said, for the first time since the Federal Reserve began raising interest rates in early 2022, underwriting assumptions for prime multifamily assets are beginning to stabilize, CBRE reported. So with, you know, leading up to today's announcement too, you've been thinking since like April and your expectations moving forward, what does that headline say to you? Multifamily cap rates have begun to stabilize. Are you seeing that?
We are in two, well, in one, in, across the board, multifamily, yes. Ryan will definitely echo this point. Cap rates are a little bit harder just because what we find is that every group evaluates cap rates differently, whether or not to trend it out, how far back, whether or not to include certain expense categories within it. But 4.7 as a general benchmark is basically what we're seeing on an overall basis. I'd add to that it is up, obviously, probably about 40 to 50 basis points from what we were seeing on average about a year ago.
Brian, what would you like to add to that?
No, I think Matt's right. I think, you know, that goes to what I said before. I think the market is seeing its way and its pathway to how deals are going to look going forward. So we're not seeing those wild swings of cap rates. We're not seeing, you know, there are some deals we looked at that had sub 4% cap rates when we were looking at them. And those are deals we did not do because we couldn't see a pathway to how that cap rate was going to translate out on a sale. But I do think you're seeing overall stabilization of pricing. And, you know, we listed some of the statistics and the slowing of price decline from, you know, 2.7 or whatever the number was to one. And I think you'll start to see that go close to zero, meaning stabilization, and then start to tick back up again. So I think that article is and headline is probably pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about this? I'm going to skip the next one on our list since we actually discussed it quite a bit. But this last one, in terms of a headline, I'm interested to hear your take on this for our audience. Rising insurance rates are yet another storm for multifamily investors to weather. How's that for a play on words with that headline? I mean, I know we've had some experience in this, but Matt, maybe you can speak like globally, you know, what that's looked like in the multifamily industry and if there's anything that we want to share about what we're seeing in our own portfolio.
Sure. I can speak to it globally. Ryan certainly will be able to speak to the specifics on how it relates to Cohen Esri overall, insurance-wise. Globally, we've seen this play out in our favor based on a policy that Ryan negotiated with our provider. We are in a lot of markets, mainly around exactly where you'd expect, along the Eastern Seaboard and along the coast. In the markets where we're hunting, we're at a huge advantage because we're looking at, in some instances, you know, a 50% shortfall against what other prospective buyers are needing, are forced to underwrite on properties in those you know, hurricane or storm zones. So it's definitely played out to our benefit.
Yeah, and I'll dig a little deeper in this so that folks can understand. Insurance is killing everybody. I mean, there's no question about that on the commercial real estate end of the point. Specifically apartments, that is all driven by two main factors, an increase in natural weather events, and to that end, an increase in loss, major losses that insurance companies are going to, which is then leading to a pullback in overall capacity. So, you know, you look at Hurricane Ian that went through Florida. There's typhoons. You've got tornadic activity. All of that kind of going back to back to back is going to cause turmoil in the insurance markets. And so what happens at that point is the various carriers begin limiting capacity. So you're starting to see people pull out of Florida, pull out of California for wildfires, because they're sustaining losses that are far too large for what they can absorb and what's going on. And that's leaving limited providers, which means the price goes up. It's hard to tell anybody what to do. We scramble every year trying to shore things up. What can we do with our policy? How can we tweak things? But the bottom line is they're assessing your risk. Now, what's interesting about insurance in the United States is there are things they call rated risk, where they can predict events. Those are typically hurricane alley zones, call it Texas, Louisiana, Florida, and coastal areas. And then there's what they classify as unrated risk. You can't predict a tornado. You have no idea when it's going to come down, where it's going to come down, how it's going to come down. So most of the central U.S. is classified as unrated. The best portfolios that you can have a good balance of rated and unrated risk. If you have a portfolio that's all in unrated risk, then that's harder for them to predict what's going to happen. If you have a portfolio that's all in rated risk, so think Florida, they're seeing insurance go up to $1,600 to $2,000 a unit. And that's crazy train when insurance used to be in our portfolio $185 a unit. So you kind of have to have a blend, and there's no easy way to do that. How can you curb it? You can increase deductibles, which takes on more risk to you or the partnership. Getting into a pool of properties will definitely diversify the risk for the carrier. So, you know, underwriting a singular property in a singular location, that's risky, because if an event happens there and they have to pay out, your insurance rates are going to go way up because you don't have a diversification of risk. So but it definitely is a problem. And I don't have the silver bullet for anybody of what to do on that. The bigger the portfolio pool you can have and the bigger risk share you can have, the more likely you are to be able to curb some of those huge increases that people are seeing.
Well, I think to wrap things up, I mean, all these different topics we've discussed just today are really highlighting different risks and variables in the multifamily real estate world right now. I know we've talked about this on podcasts before, but Matt, maybe just to close things out, could you share with everyone just how many deals you're looking at every week and how disciplined our approach remains as we narrow down the total deal flow tunnel to making an offer to winning, just so our audience can get a sense of the volume of deals we're looking at and thinking about all these variables all at the same time.
Sure. So overall, we're returning back to our average pipeline. So on a weekly basis, we'll look at between $750 million to about $1 billion of potential acquisitions. We're really right in that range now, especially with the influence of recent listings that have hit the market. Our approach, this will not be shocking, really hasn't changed. What we're seeing, one of the headlines we didn't cover, and probably wisely so, because it's been basically covered to death at this point in all the publications, is that even very, very experienced operators with decades-long operational histories are basically getting caught in number of respects, basically by abandoning any semblance of conservative underwriting, whether it's carrying forward extraordinarily high year-over-year rent growth projections or underwriting expenses that really aren't on par with some of the inflationary pressures that we've experienced of late. We here at Cohen Esri, as you know, have our box, and our box has not changed. And we find that at times like this, that really makes the difference between a portfolio carrying on steady eddy, even when the times and the macroeconomic circumstances get challenging. And that's what we're seeing. So we're going to continue to look for really strong, verifiable value add opportunities in robust growth markets at price per unit that have been proven out in the submarket already.
Matt, that was great. Thanks for wrapping things up for us in this summary. So thanks for your time. Thanks, Ryan, as well. And to our audience, we've surpassed 1,000 downloads now. So big celebration here. Appreciate everyone listening and for your support. Thanks a lot.